Well, well, welcome to Between Sundays. I'm Barry, and I'm here without a bucket. My bucket is Tyler. He's not here again. Today, we're talking about isolation and hope. We'll talk about my sermon from this past weekend, but before we do that, now that she's back from worshiping on Mount Gerizim, please welcome in my favorite Samaritan, Maren Gaffron. Good day, Maren.
Why, good day, Barry. Good day.
Hey, we managed to make another podcast happen without Tyler. We're hurting here.
Tyler,
where are you, man?
Man, he's not on Mount Gerizim, I'll tell you that much.
No, it looked, based on social media, it looked like he was out on a body of water somewhere.
A pristine glass-like lake.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's way better. That's more his style.
Lauren has been posting pictures from this family vacation they've been on, and one of the pictures was her sitting on a dock, like, reading a book or something, but that water is so crystal clear, like you could see straight through to the bottom of the lake. So,
oh, that's cool.
That was one of the comments I had to make, was just how beautiful it looks, because I know of Tyler's aversion to the dark waters.
Yeah, he does not like those dark waters. There's a picture that she posted, I think, of Milo looking like a straight up teenager. Did you see that? He looks like he's so old all of a sudden, and it's crazy. So. Well, we'll talk to Tyler when he gets back, and I'm sure he's going to have plenty of hijinks and adventures to share with us.
Yeah, I want to ask him about his son. I think his son either got locked in a room or locked the entire family out of the house. So remind me to ask him that next week.
Yeah, we got to find out. We got to find out what's going on. How are you doing, Maren? What's new in your life?
I'm doing good. I think, I don't know. I feel like I'm jumping onto a moving treadmill. I just feel like I'm running. I think with the kids, I should call them, are they even kids anymore? They're old.
Young adults?
I have a junior in high school and a sophomore in high school. I can't be calling them kids. They start school this week.
Wow.
So it's all
And what's the what's the plan for their school district? Are they doing virtual online? I can't remember
right.
what
so
you
they're,
said.
Right, so they're in Hamilton Southeastern Schools, and they're initially going back completely online. So
gotcha.
We went and did a textbook pickup late last week. And
yeah,
for the most part, they'll be using computers and not textbooks. Desi didn't have one book to pick up. Jaden is
really?
The guy with the books. So it'll be interesting no matter what. But
are they, I don't have kids. So I imagine that normally there's a bit of relief when you can kind of get back to the new rhythm of the fall and school and just like normal life, but I imagine that's not the case for you.
No,
with them being home.
No, yeah. No, not the case. Just they want to go back to school. They are tired of the at-home thing, and it's funny. Like I see my daughter come alive Sunday night when she gets to go to Merge. Because she doesn't have a job yet, even though she's been out there applying, looking for that work.
Oh, yeah?
She just wants to get out of the house. So when she gets a chance to go to Merge, it's the only time that she puts, you know, effort into changing clothes and just wants to be somewhere, you know. So Jaden gets a little bit more opportunity to do that than she does because of marching band, while they've scaled it back to its bare bones this year, at least he still gets to go and have sectionals, and they do them outdoors and they do them distanced, but he at least has a bit more, just a little bit more normalcy right now than she does. So here we go.
Well,
2020.
I just can't imagine why they would want to leave the house. I'm sure that you and Jed
we're
equivalent
fantastic.
To any of their same age friends.
We're stellar. I would want to hang out with me all day, every day, 24/7. Yeah. No. Well, and Jed's going back. Jed works for IPS schools. So again, just this is kind of the week where these meetings are starting back up and they're starting to be held in person. And he's spent some time in his school building prepping a classroom that at least at this point he's not even sure he'll get to use anytime soon.
Yeah.
So, yeah, all the things. That's how we're doing. But we're hanging in there. We're staying alive. How about you?
Hanging in there. I'm fine. I can't complain. I'm just I'm just working. If you notice, maybe you can tell looking at the video, my room is completely, all of the living room furniture and everything is crammed into my office. So I'm like super claustrophobic in here because Olivia has decided to just tackle refinishing the wood floors
in our
living room. And so all the hardwood floors in there, she's got this massive rented sander thing that she's been going all day.
I see it right there through your door.
It's really going to look great. It's going to be genuinely awesome. And I am I continue to be amazed at this woman who just turned into this DIY prodigy out of nowhere. And I was asking her questions and like, she knew the answer. She knew everything about finishing floors because she watched all the YouTube. And
yes,
I was like,
of course,
that's my thing. Like you're all of a sudden turning into me when it comes to projects.
You got a belt sander.
Yes.
Because Jed has done this twice in two different places where we have lived. He has refinished hardwood floors. So it's sand for days, you know?
Yeah.
It's dust everywhere.
Yeah.
It's a good time.
Well, it seems to be going well. It looks incredible compared to how it did before. So
I was going to ask you why there's a giant rug rolled up, leaning up against,
like leaning
the, wall
against the wall
behind
why there's
your
a
head.
Couch. Why there's a couch right behind me. Pressed up against a bookshelf. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. The poor rabbits are very confused.
That's what I was going to ask. Did it displace the rabbits or are they there?
No, they're,
like,
they're in
the
here,
furniture?
but they are like, they're used to like their territory and their space. And like, you could like rearrange their pen and they'd get stressed out for a bit. Cause they're just like, wait, where's everything? What's going on? What's safe? What's not? Where are my corners? Like,
yeah.
And so, yeah, putting all this stuff in here. I came in this morning, with some coffee and they found them just both like sitting completely dazed in the middle of the room, like completely confused.
Oh,
so they'll be fine. They'll be fine. We'll go back to normal soon. So anyway, yeah, I'm good. I'm just busy working. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on. I mentioned last week, the sort of the financial situation that we're in as a church. And so we just have some hard decisions to make this week as we're making our budget for the next ministry year. It's just a lot of hard decisions. And so,
I don't know that our listeners might not all be aware of what August traditionally means.
Yeah.
For our organization.
Right. We have a ministry year budget currently that goes from September to August. So generally speaking, by end of July, middle of August, we have our budgets, like our budget sorted and set. And of course we don't ever know what people will give. So we have to base our budget based on
projections.
Our best guess, mm-hmm. projections on last year's giving and things like that. And so, but the last year's giving was kind of down from what we had hoped. And we have the COVID pandemic happening. We're trying to make sure that we're going to be able to weather whatever kinds of downturns start coming our way in the days ahead. So it's a lot of, it's a lot of pressure and it's complicated and heavy and intense, but for whatever reason, at this exact moment, I'm in an okay headspace and I seem to be relatively happy. So, I suppose we should talk a little bit about reopening our buildings this past weekend for worship.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how that went. I was over worshiping on Mount Gerizim, so I don't know how it went with 146, but
yeah. Well, I want to hear what your experience was like. I would say generally it was really positive. People were there. I mean, it was obviously like marbles in a shoebox, 250 people in, like, not a lot of bouncing around.
Is that a thing? Do people say
it's
that?
It's an expression. I've heard
like
it before.
Marbles in a shoebox?
I don't
that's
know.
New to
Maybe
me.
That's just in my own imagination.
No,
but
I'm
they're
sure
just
using it.
Bouncing around, a lot of empty space, 250 people in an auditorium for, I don't know, what is it, 1,400?
Right.
So, yeah. So it was. But the energy of having actual people in the room, and I mean, after worshiping in shorts with a cup of coffee on your couch for months, coming back to like live worship and subwoofers, and like it's a good experience overall. I will say it was very awkward for me when I did the sermon that got sent to the campuses to try to figure out how to do both paying attention to the online audience and the people in the room.
Yeah.
I for the last few months have just been staring at the camera, and so I'm able to totally engage with that one point of reference, and then all of a sudden now I'm here and there's people in the room, and so I want to move around and be natural, but I don't want to make it like I forget that there's people watching online. And so I don't know, I didn't quite get that figured out, but I think I probably will end up just erring on the side of being a little bit more natural. People watching online can just get used to the fact that they're watching.
Well, they know what they're watching.
They know. They know.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. And so I'm at the Fishers campus and watching that moment in the sermon where you turned to both the audience that was present with you in the room and to us as the viewer saying, I'm still trying to figure out which way to look. You know, I'm sorry, just have patience and bear with me. We know what we're seeing. We know that's true. You're having a service there. So, yeah.
Okay, well, good. how was it? What was it like for you guys?
It was great. I think it was less of a marbles in a shoebox situation because our auditorium is a little bit smaller a lot smaller than your auditorium there at 146. So the way that people are spread out in that room from my vantage point was just so neat to see how many people were there and to see who was there and to see entire families taking up one row. Because that's how we seat people as they come in. We ask them if they have a preference of sitting in the, you know, closer to the stage or sitting kind of back up, in the further away seats, and we seat the families together. And yeah, from my vantage point, there were a couple of things that were neat about it. You know how churches get where even my husband tends to be like this, where he sits in the same place every Sunday. So that was different seeing, the Dundors sit up front when normally they've got this spot where they always sit. Right. And just seeing families in different places was just kind of something that was refreshing and sort of neat, because some of these folks, I know one person in particular who is more physical when she worships, and she'll dance. And so to see her down front, like dancing in worship, was super neat. I saw a couple of people that seemed to be a bit more outwardly demonstrative in their worship. And I couldn't tell if it was because this was their first time back and they were so happy to be there. And so I must have seen at least three people literally dancing during the worship. So that was really cool.
Wow.
That was awesome. And then I think I had my friend Eric was leading with me this week, and after the service, he just made a comment about how different it is to have people worship with masks on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're up front and you're leading the people in worship, we're not performing, we're leading people. And so we're constantly aware of the engagement of our people, or at least the perceived engagement of our people. And we can see mouths moving, or I can hear audible voices. I can hear people raising their voices collectively in worship. And so the masks change a lot of that aspect of what I do as a leader.
Right.
I can't tell if they're singing because I can't see their mouths moving, and I can't necessarily hear them because they're muffled. So it's just it's another challenge as a leader to figure out how to lead through this situation and through this time. We know it's uncomfortable to have to sing into your mask, and I'm not going to ask you to sing loud enough for me to hear you, because it's enough for me that you're in this room. It's enough for me that you came and you're engaging with God's family this way. So, yeah, it's just someone should write a book about this, Barry.
I think some books will be written
in 2020. Does it look like?
I kind of feel your pain at least a little bit, because there were a couple things I said, which, you know, there's like, I'll say some jokes that'll get an audible laugh, and I'll say some that'll just get a chuckle, but I can't hear any chuckles. And so I would say something that was kind of funny, and then nothing. I couldn't hear anything, and I'm like, oh no, it just fell totally flat. And then I'm like, or did it? Everyone's has like smiling eyes, but I can't tell what's going on. So.
Right. Yeah, it was interesting. But the people who were gathered, you could see it in their eyes and in the way that they interacted with each other from a distance, just how much it meant to be together.
Yeah.
To be together again, because they could hear the sermon from home if that's all they wanted. But you could tell that what was important to them was seeing one another and being together. And, you know, as much as many of us have had to and still have to be distanced that way, for those that are able to gather, there's really nothing like being together in person. So it was great.
It was great. God willing, it will stay this way and things will ease up and we'll be able to have, you know, an increasing number of people coming on the weekends and get to the point where eventually things will get back to something that resembles normal. So for now, well, let's enjoy what we have and pray that it keeps getting better.
Yeah.
So cool. Well, hey, tell you what, let's get into the sermon. We don't have to go the full super long time because it's just you and me. We don't have Tyler prompting us. It's okay if we want to keep it a little on the shorter side. Why not? A little gift. We said that last time.
I dare us to try to keep this
We'll
short.
Do what we can. Dear listeners, we'll do what we can. And if not, I'm sure you'll forgive us. So anyway, why don't I, since I'm kind of the de facto host for this one.
Sure.
Why don't I...
How about you just tell me about your big idea? Could you do
the
that?
Big idea.
Could you just give me the overarching summary?
Right. So we're starting Hope Month. This is the new sermon series. And if you aren't familiar with how we do Hope Month, we do it as a unified series. So everybody, all the grade levels, kids all the way up, are all learning the same topics each week, told differently, age appropriate, obviously. But the focus on Hope Month is that we talk about how God is healing one of the six broken places of the world. Each year, it's a different focus. Last year, we talked about hatred. This year, we're talking about isolation. How do we heal isolation in Jesus' name in this world? And so that's what this month is all about. And I began by talking about the first, what I believe is kind of the first step on the road out of isolation, which is dignity, by offering someone dignity, by seeing them for who they really are, for their humanity. That is how you begin the process of healing isolation. And I based all of that on the story of Jesus interacting with the Samaritan woman at the well in John 4. And in the story, we can talk about specifics of it, but basically Jesus cuts through a ton of cultural expectations of him as a rabbi, as a man. He speaks to this woman who's a Samaritan, who's outcast from her people for some reason, and sees her for who she is, loves her for who she is, and offers her living water. And ultimately, it ends up, you know, launching her into going back into her village and telling everybody, hey, got to come see this guy, and he might be the Messiah. And the story ends with this sort of isolated woman coming back to Jesus with this huge crowd of people from her village. So I don't know. It's beautiful. And it just shows how Jesus's compassion in engaging with this woman not only began to heal her isolation, but it also began pointing her towards a purpose beyond herself, like evangelizing her village. So
two questions,
cool.
Barry.
Yeah.
The first is more about our church, and the second will be more about some background information biblically.
Sure.
But the first one, you know, we have some language that we use at Grace Church. Some is more recognizable than others. For instance, bring your own Bible. We say BYOB. We say bring your own Bible. That's something we've been doing kind of throughout the last couple of years that I think our people, when they hear that, they know what it means. They know what we're getting into. But this is only our second Hope Month that we have had as a church. Did the topic for Hope Month change because of what's been happening in the year 2020, or were we going to focus on the broken place of isolation regardless?
Good question. It did change. Back when, end of last year, as I was kind of starting to think through the year ahead, I had landed on I was pretty sure that it would be the right thing to do to focus on separation from God as the broken place for this year. I mean, I didn't know there'd be a pandemic. I just knew that this would be my first one after becoming senior pastor. And so I thought, you know, it would be good to do this one. So this is the big one, separation from God. And also, if we were to do something like injustice, I feel like everybody would be like, well, of course, Barry's going to talk about injustice, because back in the day, that's all I ever preached about. So anyway, I thought we would change it up and do separation. But once the pandemic hit, once we saw just how deeply people were being affected by all of this, we said, let's change this up and focus on isolation, because we know not only do our people need it, but this is an opportunity for the church to step up and really, you know, work to heal this in our world. So,
I was struck. I've been thinking about the things that led us to this point. And even your dad, in his last couple of messages, our former senior pastor, Dave, talked about loneliness quite a bit and how loneliness was at epidemic proportions in this country and worldwide before the pandemic ever was on anyone's radar. We were talking a great deal about loneliness and the brokenness of isolation, and then this happened.
So
do you ever just look backwards like that and see either strange coincidences or possibly even ways that God was kind of preparing us for what would come?
Oh yeah, good question. I mean, that kind of thing does seem to happen. Well, I mean, I'll take the really big reality of what we're going through right now. In a sense, you could say that, like, me becoming senior pastor in the middle of a pandemic after two church restructurings is like, wow, what a terrible time to become senior pastor. What a challenging place to be. But on the other hand, it is me becoming senior pastor at a time when there's no, like I said last week, I have no ability to do this all on my own. I can't in my own, you know, human strength pull any of this off. I have to rely on God. And so it's forcing me into a posture of dependence right off the bat. And I think, and even, so we did something interesting that we haven't done before. To try to engage our members a little bit more in some of the questions regarding our budget, I sent out a video and some information on where we are financially and asked and gave some sort of budget scenarios to our members. And I asked them, what do you think? Like, what, you know, pray about this. And what do you feel God is leading us towards? And to hear their feedback and their take on our situation, which we haven't done that before. Cause I mean, 9 times out of 10, it's really hard to integrate a whole bunch of people's opinions and all of that. But at the same time, it's just like, what do you, you know, how can you respond to everybody and all that? But this time around, I just felt it was really important that we were all kind of in this together. Mm-hmm. And so we took a gamble and we went this way and did it. And so far the feedback has been extremely helpful and so insightful to where our people's hearts are, and great suggestions, creative ideas. It's been really good. And honestly, what it may have done is it may have changed the way that we interact with our members when it comes to decisions like this, because I'm now seeing how fruitful it is. So in a sense, because of the direness of some of our situation, it's kind of opened the door to what I think will be a really healthy and sustainable way to move forward. So all that to say, yeah, I think God definitely was setting the stage for this in some sense. The timing of this, I don't think it was a coincidence. I mean, who knew? And we just said, well, let's make it a 5-year process back in, you know, spring of 2015, that it was going to end up ending right in the middle of all of this. So
wow. Yeah. Who could have seen that coming, to go to last month's sermon series? My goodness. So I did watch that video that you sent. And just to clarify, that video was sent to Covenant Community members, to church membership, vested, you know, members of our church, which I actually had a volunteer ask me this week, I want to be a member. How can I become a member? Would you
so
tell
real
people
quick,
who want to do that?
Totally. So we have our next Covenant Community gathering coming up, and I think we're sending out an email at CovCom, folks. If you haven't heard this yet, don't worry. We're sending it out sometime this week, early this week. But we have one coming up at the end of August. It'll be August 30th on a Sunday at 2 p.m. That'll be our next gathering. But if you want to join Covenant Community, we are going to be having a Covenant Community membership class on Wednesday night, the 26th. And it's going to be a hybrid of in-person and virtual, because we know that that's, you know, challenging. And we'll have some live aspect of it at each campus based on where you attend and all of that. So anyway,
are
if you want to join...
Are we making an announcement about that? Or should
we
just
will make an announcement.
Spread
the word. Go ahead and spread the word. But we will make an announcement about it, because it's important. So
Well, one of the things I loved that you said, I know we're a little bit off the topic, but I loved that you, in your video email to the Covenant Community, you said, we know that you, our congregation, you hear the voice of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Just because we're church staff, that doesn't mean we are the only ones
totally.
Who hear the voice of the Holy Spirit. And that's what you're looking for. You're looking for wisdom, from the Holy Spirit to come through your congregation because you know that they have it. So that just blessed me, Barry, to see your confidence in our people and in their ability to also discern and rightly divide the word of God and hear the Holy Spirit. So
yeah,
that was cool.
Yeah.
So then my nerdy biblical background question, we hear about the word Samaritan pretty much twice, right? Where there's a good one and then there's the Samaritan woman at the well. I think we have appropriated the word Samaritan to automatically mean something good. Samaritan's purse.
Oh, interesting.
Or, you know, and he
because
was,
of the good Samaritan.
Right, right. The person whose car ran off the road was rescued by a passerby, a good Samaritan. That's a word that we use in and outside of church circles. Even, you know, news media will use that word.
Sure.
So tell us a little bit more about why it would be so controversial for Jesus to be asking a Samaritan woman. You did talk about it a little bit in your message, but if Samaritans are these good people,
right,
as we have used the word,
right,
why would it have been so controversial for Jesus to talk to her to begin with?
Right. And just as a note, when that story of the good Samaritan, the thing that was so shocking about that story is that the good guy in that story is a Samaritan. So he's talking to Jewish people about a Samaritan that's doing something good that the priests wouldn't even do. And everyone's like, what? A Samaritan? So, I did a little bit of extra poking around on this. I mean, I've known some of this, but I wanted to really understand it. So basically there are two schools of thought as to why the Samaritans and the Jews didn't get along. One of them is from a Jewish perspective and one of them is from a Samaritan perspective. So from the Jewish perspective, you remember we talked last month all about the Babylonian exile, right? When the Babylonians took away the you know, upper crust of Israel and took them off into exile in Babylon. Well, before the Babylonian exile, there was another exile called the Assyrian exile. It was a little less structured and a little less, it was not quite as like one big fell swoop. It was this kind of extended Assyrian invasion of the northern kingdom called Israel, and the southern kingdom's called Judah. Judah went to Babylon. The northern kingdom, this was like, I want to say like 150 or 200 years, or no, 150 years before the Babylonian exile. The Assyrians came down from the north. They invaded, they destroyed a whole bunch of, they destroyed Damascus in Syria. They came in and they almost just destroyed Jerusalem. They surrounded Jerusalem, but then they left. But they came in, and the way that, I mean, the Assyrians, Babylonians were bad guys. Assyrians were like just the worst. Like they would literally carve the sides of mountains to tell about how they dismembered and disemboweled their enemies, how they would like put the, you know, this enemy king's head on a plate and force his wives to watch someone, like messed up stuff. And they like bragged about that because they wanted to instill fear into everyone's hearts. Well, one of the ways that they dominated an area and just took away any power that an area had is that they would take a ton of the people away from that area, maybe either into slavery, or they would take them all and then forcibly resettle them somewhere a bajillion miles away and then force them to be like the new inhabitants of that land. And so from the Jewish perspective, the Assyrians had come in, destroyed the northern kingdom, and then planted in a bunch of Gentiles from a bunch of different countries in that region. So all of a sudden, there's all these foreigners living in Israel. So that when the Jews went off to Babylon, all these foreigners really put down all their roots and got established. And so when the Jews came back from the Babylonian exile, they look around and there's all these foreigners, and these foreigners intermarried with some of the people, some of the Israelites who remained behind. And it became this kind of, they kind of thought of them as these like half breed, half Gentile, half Jewish people, that they just despised them. And not to mention the fact that they claimed that their mountain, Mount Gerizim, was the place where that they should rightly worship God, while they were saying, no, it's Jerusalem. And so it's just bad blood and disagreements, and they didn't like each other. The twist, and I don't think I really understood this, but the Samaritan understanding of this whole narrative is that when the Assyrians came down, they dealt a significant blow to the northern kingdom. They dismantled their power structures, but some Israelites remained, And the Samaritans believed we're the ones descended from those Israelites who remained. Mm. So they said, we're actually the most pure representation of the original forefathers of the ancestors. Like, we are the ones that have continuity in the land from way before you guys got kicked out to Babylon. Like, we've been here ever since. Wow. And so they said, and so they would actually say, yeah, when you go back to Abraham and Jacob and all of that, this was the mountain. Mount Gerizim was the mountain that all the stuff was happening on, not Mount Zion.
Huh.
And so they just believed that they were the OG, you know, Israelites.
Right.
And so, of course, they're not happy with all these, you know, Jewish, Judean Israelites saying, no, we're the ones. And so, yeah,
so that was interesting. So that's fascinating because you can talk about what led you to this point, but you talked about how Jesus spoke to her, almost prophetically. It's like he sets her up, you know, hey, yeah. Where's your husband?
Yeah.
He knows. Yeah. And she's like, oh, you know, I don't have a husband. He's like, well, you had five husbands. And
right.
So he's setting her up. And when he says that to her, you've had five husbands, she quickly changes the subject. Mm-hmm. Well, sure. You guess looks like you're a prophet. So then tell me this, how come we say Mount Gerizim is the place to worship and you say, she tries to change the subject. And Jesus's response to her was basically, hey, it's not going to matter which mountain you worship on. The time is coming where that's not going to matter anymore.
Right.
So whatever she was majoring in, the great divide between the two groups, he is just shutting that down. And saying, look, that's not going to matter anymore.
Right. He's saying, well, really, yeah. And even if they were half Gentile, it's not going to matter because they're all going to be worshiping God in spirit and truth. So,
yeah,
it's really cool. So one of the things I pointed out, which you kind of mentioned the way that he calls her out about the husbands. I pointed this out and I thought it was important because there's another way to look at even just what you said about her, you know, changing the subject. Mm-hmm. It's possible that she wasn't changing the subject because perhaps he wasn't actually ribbing her for her immorality for all the husbands. Maybe, like I said in the message, perhaps she had been rejected by all these men. Perhaps she had lost, maybe all of her husbands had died and she was left destitute. And like, we don't know the situation, but what is unlikely is that she was this, you know, hussy that was divorcing her husbands to go off with other men because women didn't have that power in the time. So it's possible if it was true that she really was like some kind of a victim of injustice or just like for whatever reason, just misfortune. Hmm. If that was her and he asks her about her husbands, it's less him like calling her out and it's more him saying like, hey, I see what you've been through. I know what you've been through.
Right.
And so when she hears that, she's like, oh, well, then you must be a prophet. Can I ask you this question I've been wondering about?
Yeah.
And so I don't know. It's just another way to read it. And so it's interesting to think that he's like, great. And so what I find interesting is when you compare this story to the one right before it, where Jesus is engaging with Nicodemus, talking, you know, who's the Pharisee, the big religious leader, you can actually find some similarities between their repartee, the back and forth between Jesus and Nicodemus, and Jesus and the Samaritan woman, and it's interesting because clearly Samaritan woman has these very big questions, so you might be led to think, oh, she's not really very educated or whatever, but it's also possible that she's actually very smart and she's very she's a very, I don't know, engaging person. You look at Jesus tells Nicodemus like, hey, you have to be born again. And Nicodemus is like, what? Like, how's that possible? And he's like, yeah, you have to be born of water and the spirit. And Nicodemus is like, you're not saying I'm supposed to go back into my mother's womb, right? Like, he's kind of like pushing back on it. And he never really comes around to be like, oh, I get it. Okay, great. But you look at the Samaritan woman right after this, Jesus says, you know, I can give you living water. And she's like, how could you do that? You can't do that. Like, you don't even have a bucket. And then he's like, no, it's different. It's like actual living water and you won't even have to be thirsty again. And she's like, okay, please give me some.
Right.
So her response is actually to go straight to like, yeah, please, I'll take it.
Where can I get it? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, I just find it, those little details are so interesting and they were not accidental when John wrote this gospel. I mean, he was very masterful in the way that he laid out all his stories. So
then she goes and she tells her entire village?
Yeah. She goes, says, hey, guys, come check it out. There's this guy who might be a prophet, might be the Messiah. Let's go check it out. And here's the thing that always, to me, makes me question the idea that she was this, like, village harlot that everybody, you know, couldn't stand, that everybody was despising. Sorry. And that's why...
Desi didn't know what hussy meant.
Hussy?
Yeah. It was one of the things she texted me in service was, what does this mean? She said it sounded like a boomer talk. And I'm like, well, it's probably pre-boomer talk.
Yeah, I think this is like greatest generation talk.
Floozy.
Yes.
My grandma would have said hussy. But anyway, I think I said it means hoochie. And then she knew what I was talking about.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So harlot, that's even more classical. And now we're going back to like the 1800s. But if she was this like despised harlot and she was coming out to the well alone, I wonder if she had come and told everybody, hey, there's this guy, would everyone be like, what are you doing here? You hussy. What are you doing here? You floozy.
Right. Why would they have listened?
Yeah. Now we don't know. So the frustrating and lovely thing about biblical texts are that they paint sometimes in primary colors and you just wish that they had more detail, or not primary colors. The stories are so simple with so little detail. You know, if we were to write that, you could write that whole moment into like a short story, a novella, you know, that whole little, but we just get a few verses and we kind of have to move on. So
I think that that's part of what I love about it, because if it were more specific, maybe it would be easier to exclude myself from the story. But because we don't know the exact nature of why she was alone, all that matters is she was alone.
She was alone.
And I can put myself into that narrative now because it isn't so specific, you know?
Right. Right. You're totally right. And that is the thing. That's why I said, I love it. It's also frustrating. I love that because it does allow you then to begin listening to the Spirit about how that might apply to your situation or how it might apply to your world or your own life, et cetera. So,
yeah.
Cool. Basically, I took away from this story, and it wasn't a super complicated message, but I just looked at the fact that Jesus offered her dignity, even though it would have been scandalous for him to talk to a Samaritan. It would have been scandalous for him to talk to a woman, to be seen with a woman, all of that. He just cuts right through that and he goes straight to dignity. He sees her for who she is. And even, like I said in the message, even if she was, or I kind of implied this, even if she was a hussy, even if she was the village harlot and she had dug herself into that pit of isolation, he still offers her living water. He knows who she is and he wants her to have life. So even so, there's dignity. There's dignity.
Well, right. And elsewhere in the Bible, we see him rescue and have mercy on the woman caught in adultery.
Yeah.
So you use one story to highlight the way that Jesus dignifies everyone he comes into contact with. But you need some more stories. You know, look them up. They're there.
Yeah, there's countless others. That's how he approaches everybody.
Right.
Dignity for children, for women, for outcasts, for lepers. It's always dignity. He never holds people at arm's length.
Right.
Yeah. So one of the things, I was curious to hear what you think about this. And this is kind of the way we're doing the whole series, but most of this message was really kind of a call to action for the church. Let's rise up and show people dignity. That's the first step out of their isolation. But I also turned to the corner and acknowledged that many, many of us in our congregation are extremely lonely. We are isolated. And so in this and with every other message in this series, it is also a call to hope for us as individuals, a call to take our own steps out of isolation. And so I began with this week by saying, like, if you are buying into the lies of your own identity, the lies of that you're filled with shame or that you have no value or any of those things, it's the time to actually, in your mind, be the woman at the well and listen to the voice of Jesus and hear him say that he wants to offer you living water. Hear him acknowledge that you have value. And so I think that's almost just as important as calling the church to something, is also reminding us, those of us in the church, that we are made in the image of God, and we have to remember that and not buy into the lies that force us into our own self-imposed isolation.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've been thinking about, you know, reasons for this isolation as we just a peek behind the curtain. You know, we'll sit and we will talk about, okay, August is coming, hope month. And then we'll talk about all these different aspects of isolation so that we can think of maybe meetups to have or activities outside the church or special activities of the church, all kind of focused at this one broken place. We're trying to... are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Sorry, it looked like you were frozen and the apocalypse is rolling in again, just like it did last
Tuesday.
Yeah,
just like last week.
So I thought you were frozen.
I was just staring intently at the screen, but I'll keep moving. There's no rabbits jumping around behind me or anything. They're too confused. Sorry,
yeah,
keep
this
going.
Is eerily reminding me of last Tuesday or last Monday. Anyhow, you know, there's lots of different reasons for why people may find themselves isolated. And you mentioned people who are ill are having to be more isolated even than normal because of the danger that's out there with this pandemic, or people who are elderly. There's that type of kind of environmental isolation, a physical isolation. But there's also what you just mentioned, this kind of self-disqualifying sort of isolation that is really self-imposed, where we think we are too sinful or not good enough, or we're afraid we'll be rejected, or we're embarrassed by our pasts, and everything that I guess maybe the Samaritan woman could have been.
Sure.
Again, we don't know that scenario, but how Jesus was intentional in treating her with dignity, but how she also had it within herself to deny Jesus a drink, to say, no, not me, I'm a Samaritan, no, you know, never. Peter tried doing that, right? Lord, you can't wash my feet. No, you know. There is a responsibility on our end to receive the truth.
Yeah.
And to receive the love.
To accept it.
Yeah, and to let to let our walls down to be able to let the love of Jesus in. So
So, I mean the words, if you only knew, I love that. Like if you only knew what was in store for you, you'd ask me. And yeah, we have to ask. Like we have to accept, and yet it's there. It's waiting for us. So
and it seems like when she caught on, it spread like wildfire. She was so excited at what she had just encountered. She went and she told everybody that she could. What did you say? You said our message spreads the fastest and the farthest when we do it together.
We are a community. We are meant to be one. We are meant to be together. We're not meant to be islands. We're not meant to be alone. It's not how we're wired. It's literally harmful to us to be alone. And it's part of the fabric of what being the body of Christ means. You know, a body doesn't do really great when all the different parts are in different rooms. You know, it works best when it's working as one in conjunction.
So let's get really practical. Barry, what does this look like given social distancing and the challenges that we're facing? I think all of these things look great on paper. They sound great, you know, philosophically. But what does it look like in August of 2020 to do the things that you described in your sermon?
Yeah. So for me, and this is a good point, I probably could have gotten more into this in the message to get real practical like this, but when it comes to our role as Christ followers to help bring dignity to others, I think the very first thing we have to do is be aware of who is isolated around us. And we have to be aware of the many people in elder care facilities that are isolated. We have to be aware of our neighbors who don't have community or don't have the ability to leave their homes. We need to be aware of classmates and coworkers who we haven't seen in a long time and also haven't heard from in a while, and we need to probably check in on them. And I think what it means to approach them with this dignity is to acknowledge their humanity and try to empathize with their situation. I mean, I have to an elderly couple lives next door to us, Bill and Sue, and they are delightful. They're amazing. But I have to remind myself regularly of what they must be experiencing right now. And so, yeah, it, for me, dignity is putting myself in their shoes, even though I'm not, you know, in their house. She's not able to move as much, and he hurt his leg recently at work. And so I've been like helping them take their garbage down the hill of their driveway on Wednesdays. You know, it's like barely anything, but they asked if I'd be willing. And I was like, of course I would. And I'm helping out whenever I can, doing little things. And it's what it's doing is it's telling them, I see you, mm-hmm. I love you, and I'm here for you. And because you deserve it, you know, you don't have to earn it. And Bill is hilarious because he's always just like, I don't know if they're between, they might be friends of the pod. So, hey, Bill and Sue, if you're listening, but he is just like, goes on and on about, he's like, I don't even know how to begin to thank you. And I'm like, Bill, I'm taking your trash can down. It's like, it's really not that big a deal, you know, but he's acting like it's this huge servant hearted, like self-sacrifice. I'm like, Bill, I take my trash down on Wednesdays. Like, it's not that hard either. I can just pop over and do it. So for me, that to me is just an example of like, we need to look at those who are in our world and put ourselves in their shoes and see their humanity. And then we respond with dignity. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm thinking, I'm trying to think of what that looks like in my life. You know, before this pandemic happened, one of the things that we've talked about at our church is, again, the epidemic of loneliness.
Yeah.
Among all the people groups, from the old to the young, to the very young, to teenagers who are feeling this intense feeling of missing out when they go on social media and they see all their other friends are hanging out, but they're sitting at home alone. And it can be a very intensified feeling of loneliness and despair. And so in that time, and again, we do need to be aware and pay attention, but I believe God brings,
of course, yeah,
these situations to us. And then if we're paying attention through his Holy Spirit, you know, we rise to do what we can. So you didn't have to go buy a house next to a couple that needed you.
Right.
But that's where God placed you. And you're rising to the occasion.
Yeah.
I was approached way back before COVID happened by a group of young girls at my campus, the Fishers campus, that they wanted to do their own Bible study at a different time. You know, they're Merge kids. They love going to Merge, but they wanted this additional Bible study and asked if I would help them with it. Well, of course I would. I love the Bible. Let's do this. So we used to meet in person, but when we weren't able to do that anymore, I love it. These girls wanted to keep meeting and keep digging deeper into the Word and doing it through Zoom. And so it started off as every other Sunday, and then it moved to every Sunday. And there was a way to still stay involved with these girls who now weren't able to go to school and weren't even able to interact with each other person to person. The Zoom was really all we had. But it was a way to stay connected. So sometimes I get overwhelmed when I look at the brokenness of the world and think, like, you know, I add it to my list of things to do. Okay. Must seek lonely people.
Right.
Must find the isolated, but
must heal injustice. Must
exactly.
do that. Yeah.
But I have to trust that God is already working and he is already establishing things and putting things into motion. He goes before us. He prepares the way. And so it's just our job to pay attention, to stay in tune with his heart, and then he will lead and he will bring the people our way and the opportunities our way. Our job is really just to not be self-centered, to be Christ-focused. And if we're Christ-focused, then of course, he said it himself, the harvest is plentiful and the workers are few. All he's looking for are a few more good workers, you know, who will pay attention and do the things that he's prepared in advance for them to do. And then we can bring healing to the world. So I find that encouraging, you know, instead of being discouraged by, well, I can't meet in this person's house and I can't do this. And well, Mary's telling me to heal isolation in a pandemic. Great. How are we supposed to do that? I find it encouraging that, again, God is moving. All you have to do is be yielded to him and his spirit, and he'll lead you. You'll see.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that as we go through more of this series, these concepts are not just like a 5-bullet point list of, okay, now go and do this. It's more about a way of living, a way of seeing yourself and your world. Next week, Tim is going to be talking about hospitality. The week after that, you are going to be talking about unity. We're going to have, it'll be great. We'll talk about proximity and family. And these are just ways of seeing yourself and others that I think when in conjunction with one another will kind of form a mentality of how we approach isolation. And so I hope it's going to be good. Well, I answered the question to what one of us would normally ask at this point, which is what's coming next.
Where are we going from here?
So that's it. Yeah, we'll keep doing that. The one other thing I'll mention is we are going to start next week. We are going to start writing letters to different categories of people for 4 weeks. We're going to have different groups of people that we're going to write letters to as a church. And so something you can do with your kids, something you can do by yourself or with your life group or any of that. So there's information online, gracechurch.us. You can go straight to our website or go straight to gracechurch.us/hope. And you can find it all there, all the resources you need, as well as, you know, kids content and student ministries curriculum and all that stuff there too. So yeah, I think it's going to be a good series. I'm looking forward to it. Can't wait to hear you speak, Maren. It's going to be good. And anything else you want to share before I ask you to send us out?
Just that I'm horribly nervous and I'm begging for prayers. Pray.
Pray for Maren. She'll do great, but pray for her anyway.
I can't remember the last time I had to talk for that long, right? Like, I can write you a song and say everything I want to say in 3.5 minutes. But
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I've loved the challenge, and you know me, I love any good excuse to nerd out in the word and reference commentaries. And that part's been super life-giving and totally fun. So
that's why I do it. I mean, shoot. that and it's on my job description. But yeah, I love the nerdy stuff.
Super cool.
All right. Well, then I'll end us there and say, Maren, would you please send us out?
Sure will. Do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God.
Oh, and I have to say this.
The other side.
And we'll see you on the other side of Sundays. Nailed it. We need Tyler back. Oh, I thought we had it, and then I forgot that he's the one who says that. Oh, well.